A lucid dream is a dream in which you are aware that you are dreaming. But for some, the experience of lucid dreaming can be much, much more. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In 1975, Robert Wagner taught himself how to lucid dream, and he has dedicated his career to teaching others to enter the same state. This hour, we'll talk about lucid dreams and what science can tell us about them. We'll also explore different methods you can use to try to enter a state of lucid dreaming and different ways you can use this skill. Wagner's latest book is Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. When you are lucid dreaming, you're aware that you're dreaming. But some people can use that awareness in truly remarkable ways. This hour, we'll talk about lucid dreaming and get some guidance from Robert Wagner of Ames. He is past president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. His most recent book is Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, Tips and Techniques for Insight, Creativity, and Personal Growth. He co-authored it with Carolyn McCready, and he is on the line with us today. Hello, Robert.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And let's go back to when this started for you. You started lucid dreaming as a child, and that's a pretty common experience for a lot of kids, right?
Right. I taught myself how to do this in 1975, and before then, when I was younger, I had lucid dreams. But there's been some studies that have shown that almost half of kids aged 6 to 19 have had a lucid dream or become consciously aware while in the dream state. And so it is pretty common.
So how did you teach yourself to do this?
Right. I was reading a book when I was a junior in high school. The book was Journey to Ixtlan by Carlos Castaneda. And in the book, his teacher, Don Juan, told him to find his hands in the dream state. And I wondered about this. Could you really find your hands in the dream and then realize you're dreaming? So because there wasn't many specific techniques on how to do this exactly, I just began the habit of looking at my hands before I went to sleep while telling myself, tonight in my dreams, I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. Tonight in my dreams, I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. And then I'd go to sleep. After doing this for about 5 minutes over the course of three nights, on the third night, I was walking through my high school hallway when suddenly, just like they were spring-loaded, my hands popped right in front of my face. And I thought, oh, my hands, this is a dream. And so at that moment, I realized that everything around me was a dream. These were dream figures over here. That's a dream wall next to me. And it was an amazing, amazing experience to become consciously aware in the dream.
And when we define lucid dreaming as that awareness that we're dreaming, I mean, that's one thing. But then you were able to, and many people have been able to take that farther. So not just that you are aware that you're dreaming, but then you start to control your actions in the dream, right?
Well, you definitely begin to learn how to influence and manipulate the dream. And so that's one reason I wrote this new book, Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple. It's just not enough that you become lucidly aware and realize you're dreaming. It also helps to understand the kind of basic rules and principles that exist in the lucid dream state, the things that you don't want to do so that you pop out of the lucid dream, and also how to stabilize the lucid dream so that then you can begin to experiment within the lucid dream. And that's what people find most fascinating as they begin to experiment and play around with what's really possible in the lucid dream.
What do we know about what our brains are doing when we are in this state of lucid dreaming? Because the research on this is fairly recent. What have we learned?
Yeah, there's some recent research where neurophysiologists have brought lucid dreamers into the sleep lab to try and understand what does the brain look like when you're having a lucid dream. So we know that when we're having a regular dream, the ancient part of the brain is very active, but the cerebral cortex and all is not active. That's only active during waking life. But what they found with lucid dreamers, they would put like 19-channel EEG recorders on their scalp, Then the people would become lucidly aware, and they could tell they were lucidly aware because they would signal with their eyes. They'd move their eyes left to right 8 times to signal their awareness that they were dreaming. And then they could turn on the recording equipment, and they saw that portions of the frontal lateral cerebral cortex became active during the lucid dream state. And so some researchers called this a hybrid state of consciousness, because not only was the dreaming part of the brain active, but also the conscious aware portions of the brain in the frontal lateral cortex were simultaneously active. And they've also done another study where they had lucid dreamers, and when they became lucidly aware, they had them in an functional MRI machine to also scan their brains. And basically, they saw the same thing, that the ancient part of the brain is active, and this aware part of the brain, the cerebral cortex, is simultaneously active. So it's really interesting to see that when these portions of the brain are active, they're connected to the idea of self-perception and self-assessment and self-reflection. And that's what occurs in a lucid dream. You realize, wait a second, this can't be real. Oh, this must be a dream. You have that moment where you can critically reflect and understand your experience.
So since these different parts of your brain are active, that gives us some insight into how, if you master lucid dreaming, or at least get better at lucid dreaming, how you could possibly use this. What are some of the ways that you can use lucid dreaming?
You know, for most people who are lucid dreamers, at first it's all just about having fun. You fly around, you play, and they've even done studies, and I think 80 or 90% of lucid dreamers say that that's primarily what they do, is just have fun. But you also realize as you get deeper into lucid dreaming that you can use lucid dreaming to resolve nightmares, to become consciously aware in the dream and realize the nightmare scenario is occurring and take care of that. But you can use lucid dream to access creativity, your inner muse, your unconscious mind, if you like. You can use lucid dreaming, I think, for promoting emotional health and even physical health. And there's a giant history in the spiritual realm of Buddhist and Taoist and Sufis using lucid dreaming as a pathway for spiritual insight and growth. So you can use it for all those things, just depending upon your interest and focus.
I want to go back to the having fun idea. In your book, so many people that you quoted, so many of the stories that you shared were about people who use lucid dreaming to fly. That seems to be a very common theme.
Exactly. People love flying when they become consciously aware in the dream. And there's just an incredible sense of joy and freedom that you have when you can fly around the dream setting and see things from a different perspective. And so sometimes people might fly around the room. Sometimes they might fly around the nearby area. And sometimes you even have accounts of people flying into outer space. So people just love to go flying in their lucid dreams.
Well, and you talked about how when you become aware of your dream and then get better at this lucid dreaming, you can influence the dream. And you mentioned using that to resolve nightmares. I think that's something that a lot of us are familiar with. But when I was reading the sections of the book that your co-author, Carolyn McCready, wrote, it sounds like she was able to alter her dream entirely and get up and fly and go somewhere that she wanted to go. It seemed like she had a great deal of control over what she would then dream.
Yes, exactly. In some lucid dreams, we have a high degree of ability to manipulate and influence the lucid dream experience. My co-author Carolyn McCready talks about one of her first lucid dreams in which she became consciously aware because she found herself in her garden in her house in England and realized that it was different than it was in waking life. And so she realized she must be dreaming. And then she began to think of the movie Superman that had just come out with Christopher Reeves. And as soon as she thought that, all of a sudden, a Superman-like character appeared, grabbed her, and took her off flying in the world around her. And so you realize that your thoughts and your beliefs and your feelings influence the lucid dream experience. So you do have an incredible ability to manipulate it, but I don't really think that you can say that you ultimately control it.
Interesting. You also write about people who use lucid dreams to practice things. So you used an anecdote about a young man who wasn't a very good swimmer, and he used lucid dreaming to improve his swimming skills. Can you give us some insight into that?
Yes. In Germany, there was an interesting news story about a gentleman, Mark Hetmanzek, and he was getting a graduate degree in sports physiology. And in waking life, he was very good at gymnastics, but not very good at swimming. And to get his master's degree in sports physiology, he had to do a swimming class. And so he realized at first the swimming coach told him that he swam like a stone. I mean, that's how bad this guy was. He was a horrible swimmer. But he realized in his lucid dreams, he could learn how to be a better swimmer. So before he'd go to sleep, he would watch video on good swimming technique. And then when he had become lucidly aware in his dreams, he would practice that technique in the dream swimming pool, lucidly aware all the time. In fact, it got to be quite funny. In some lucid dreams, he decided to make the swimming pool full of things like yogurt and honey in order to kind of slow down the swimming experience so that he could get the movements and the form exactly right. And what happened is his coach was stunned that in waking life, his physical ability was improving. His swimming times were improving. His form was improving. And by the end of the semester, he got excellent grades and excellent scores on his swimming ability.
Interesting. And do you find in your personal practice, do you find that people who are good at visualizing things when they're awake tend to be better at lucid dreaming, or at least find a pathway to it a little bit easier?
You know, I think visualization does help. It's used in some of the induction techniques, and also just having an active state of mind, being able to recall your dreams is very good too. So those kind of things can help a person become a good lucid dreamer.
Now, in a few minutes, we're going to talk about some of the different methods that you have helped people use to induce this state of lucid dreaming. But you mentioned recalling your dreams, and that seems to be a big key, being able to remember your dreams.
Right. You know, in our society, dreams are kind of devalued. People don't think much about their dreams. They don't talk about them much. And so just getting into the habit of recalling your dreams is the first step to having any success as a lucid dreamer. So what I encourage people to do is to create a dream journal, have it by your bed with a pen or a pencil, or some people like to use a voice-activated recorder to recall their dreams when they wake. But by having that, it's the first step to really becoming a good person on the dreaming path.
All right. Well, take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Robert Wagner. His most recent book is Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple: Tips and Techniques for Insight, Creativity, and Personal Growth. You can join our conversation as well with your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about lucid dreaming, and Robert Wagner is here with us today. His most recent book is Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple: Tips and Techniques for Insight, Creativity, and Personal Growth. He is also the past president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. He lives in Ames. And Robert, before the break, we were just getting to sort of the beginning of the how two part of our conversation. And I'm sure when you write about lucid dreaming, when you speak about lucid dreaming, that's the first thing that people always ask you, I'm sure, is, but how can I do it?
Exactly. And that's an important thing. You have to know how to become lucidly aware and also how to stabilize that lucid dream so that you can begin to explore and experiment.
Now, it was interesting that in the book you quoted some statistics about when people were surveyed about whether they had ever had a lucid dream or not. More people in the United States responded, somewhere in the 70% range, responded that they had than anywhere else in the world. Why do you think lucid dreaming is so much more common here?
Well, I think the first scientific evidence emerged here at Stanford University through the work of Stephen LaBerge. There he realized that you could signal with your eyes that you were consciously aware in the dream state. And so that information came out in 1980. And so I think here in America, we got kind of a jump start on that. But as you look around the world, really about 50% of the people when they're surveyed can report at least one instance of becoming lucidly aware. And about 20% of the people say they become lucidly aware at least once a month. So it is relatively common.
Interesting. And now you mentioned earlier the way that you taught yourself to become lucidly aware by focusing on your hands and saying that in your dream you would see your hands and you would know that you are dreaming. That was a method that works for you. It's a method that you've also taught to many others, right?
Exactly. And it's funny, when I hear some of the reports, I remember I was giving a talk in Los Angeles, and a young man came up to tell me that he had used that technique and successfully. And then one night his hands popped in front of his face and he didn't get it. And all of a sudden his hands started slapping him on the face until he realized, oh, this is a dream. and so you can see how the unconscious mind can kind of prompt you even when you don't immediately get it.
With people that you have advised, do you have an average for about how long it takes people to use that method and have success with it?
You know, it really varies. I've had some people who just started reading my first book and within the first 50 pages had their first lucid dream. And so sometimes it's just getting your mind focused on this idea, getting intellectually curious about the experience of it, and it just automatically comes about. For other people, especially people who don't have good dream recall and that kind of thing, it can take a while before they achieve that state of lucid dreaming.
And your co-author wrote about when she taught herself to lucid dream, she was using meditation. What are some of the other methods that can be used?
So people sometimes use the power of suggestion. For example, they might, before they go to sleep, spend 3 or 4 minutes just repeating this suggestion to themselves. Tonight in my dreams, I'll be more critically aware. And when I experience something odd, I'll realize I'm dreaming and become lucid. So tonight in my dreams, I'll be more critically aware. And when I experience something odd, I'll realize I'm dreaming and become lucidly aware. Because so often in our normal dreams, we just accept whatever happens. We're not very critically aware. And so suggesting to yourself that you're more critically aware oftentimes helps. Other people have used hypnosis. During the day, they use self-hypnosis to kind of get into a state where they would find it easier to become lucidly aware. And there's been some research studies that suggested that. There's an ancient way of becoming lucidly aware that comes from some of these spiritual practices. And one of them is imagining before you go to sleep that there's a candlelight at the base of your throat. And so this candlelight represents the light of awareness. And so as you're going to sleep, imagine this candlelight at the base of your throat. Or if you're in the Buddhist perspective, you could imagine a red lotus there and a white light emerging from the center of it. But oftentimes when people try that, who are good at visualization, they'll spontaneously become consciously aware of dreaming while in the dream state.
Now, a lot of people have the experience when they do become aware that they're lucid dreaming, when they have that moment of, oh, this is a dream. I'm dreaming. For a lot of people, that's the last moment in the dream because that kind of awareness tends to wake us up. So how do you get past that?
You know, for beginners, the important point that I immediately stress is don't get too excited when you become lucidly aware. Because if you get too excited, you're going to pop out of the lucid dream almost immediately. So if you become consciously aware when you see Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, and then you think, wait a second, what are they doing here in Des Moines, Iowa? You know, don't get too excited. Instead, tell yourself to calm down, look at your hands, look at the ground, something boring to reduce that kind of emotional stimulation. So that's probably the first thing that lucid dreamers have to learn.
So you have to remain calm. Is there a time that you're more likely to be able to dream lucidly? I mean, I think about those early morning hours where you wake up from a dream and then sometimes you go back to sleep, you slip back into the same dream. It's kind of a surreal time. Is there a time like that when slipping into lucid dreaming is more easy?
Yes, there is. You know, every night we spend about 2 hours in the dream state, but as the night progresses, the dreams get longer. And so when they've done studies about when lucid dreams are most likely to occur, they're normally in that last dream state of the night, the last dream state or the last two dream states of the night, because those dreams are the longest, and also those dream states are the ones in which we're a little bit more consciously active than in the other states.
Interesting. Now, okay, we want to stay calm. Don't get too excited. You also don't want to pay too much attention to something. Is that another one of the tips?
Well, so you don't want to get excited. Also, you need sometimes to enhance your awareness. So if I became lucidly aware and wasn't too excited, I might rub my dream hands together to get kind of a kinesthetic sense of a sense of being in that dream more clearly. Or I might shout out more clarity now or greater awareness now. And sometimes you can tell that's having an effect in the lucid dreams because it's like someone turns up the lights when you ask for greater clarity. But the difficult thing for many beginners is to maintain their awareness of being lucidly aware, because you become lucidly aware when you see something strange, and then you begin to explore the dream. And because dreams can often be very enticing, you might see something like a man playing a flute while a snake comes out of a basket. And if you're not too consciously aware, you'll get re-involved in the dream. You'll lose your lucid awareness, and then it'll return to a normal dream. So that's an important point, is your awareness fluctuates within the lucid dream. So you have to be engaged in the lucid dream, but all the time consciously aware this is a dream.
Interesting. And a lot of people who experience lucid dreaming also find that if they focus on something for too long, that might wake them.
Exactly. That's another kind of principle that everyone has discovered around the world. In a lucid dream, if you stare at something for too long, for 5 or 6 seconds, fixedly staring at something, normally the dream will get shaky and collapse. And so I encourage people, if you want to look at something, look at it for a second or two, turn away, then look at it again. It's interesting that in real world, we know that rapid eye movements are commonly associated with dreaming, that our eyes move constantly around. And it's interesting that when you try to fix your eyes and stare at something in a lucid dream, normally you can only do it for 5 or 6 seconds before the dream collapses.
I'm talking with Robert Wagner. His most recent book is Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple. And you are welcome to join our conversation as well. Do you have questions about lucid dreaming? Have you had dream experiences that you'd like to understand a little more clearly? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is an email from Kelly. She says, when I have lucid dreams, I tend to sleep talk and have trouble waking up out of the dream. Do you have any insight on whether this is because the type or stage of sleep is an effect of stress?
Yeah, I haven't ever heard that before, so I don't know why that would be the case. Normally for lucid dreamers, the problem is staying in the lucid dream, and it's very easy to pop out. So normally when you want to pop out of a lucid dream, all you have to do is intend for yourself to wake up.
Okay. Sarah is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I was calling to get his opinion on whether lucid dreaming can actually help you have a more restful night's sleep. I often dream a lot, and I recall a lot of my dreams. And just kind of in the talk, I remember from the time I was a kid, like if I was having a bad dream, I could become aware that I was dreaming, and I would have to complete a certain task in order to get out of that bad dream. And I sometimes have disturbing dreams still, and kind of just, is there a way to make my sleep more restful by using lucid dreaming?
You know, that's a great question, Sarah. Oftentimes, lucid dreamers report that when they become consciously aware within a dream, they have kind of a sense of lucid euphoria. And then when they wake up in the morning, they kind of have this lucid afterglow, feeling very content and energized. And so lucid dreaming doesn't make a person feel tired or anything like that. But I think you could use lucid dreaming as a way to suggest, once you became consciously aware in the dream, that you could work through issues or problems that might be causing you to have non-restful sleep. For me as a practice, when I become lucidly aware, I always go to the area of the most energy, because if there's something in that dream, I assume it's something that has to do with me, and I want to resolve it as constructively as possible. So I think you could use lucid dreaming for a more restful night's sleep.
And Sarah, when you're having all of these different dreams, do they often wake you up? Is that part of the reason you're not getting enough sleep?
Yes. It's kind of like I become aware that I'm dreaming. Like, for example, I might be having a dream that my dog is dead or is dying or something like that. And then I become aware, oh, this is just a dream. Hurry up and wake up so that I'm not experiencing this anymore.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So oftentimes we can use lucid dreaming to understand the dream more deeply, and we can find out why exactly are we having this kind of anxiety dream. So in my book, I give lots of ways that a person can explore this more deeply to figure out what's going on here.
So if Sarah is becoming lucid in her dream, mm-hmm. it's possible that she could actually use that lucidity to stay asleep as opposed to trying to exit whatever's happening?
She certainly could. She could stay in the dream state. But I think most importantly is you can use this lucid dreaming state to understand what's going on. Some therapists have used lucid dreaming to help people with recurring nightmares from post-traumatic stress disorder. And so they teach the person with PTSD how to become consciously aware in their dreams because of that recurring nightmare. And normally, when they become consciously aware just once, lucidly aware in that recurring nightmare, normally the nightmares basically cease after that. And so it doesn't take care of every aspect of PTSD, but it does give them their night's sleep back. But for someone like Sarah, she could stop in that lucid dream and ask the larger awareness in the dream, what's going on here? Why am I seeing my dog having this kind of experience? And by doing that, she might learn something about what's actually symbolized by this dream experience. And it might resolve something to make it easier for her to sleep.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call. And Robert, one of the things you write about in your book is actually, because you are very adept at lucid dreaming, using that state to ask questions of your dream. And you started out by asking people who appeared in your dream, but then you changed your method. Can you explain that?
Yeah, at the beginning of lucid dreaming, like many people, I would talk to dream figures and ask them questions. And it's interesting, sometimes lucid dreamers will ask a dream figure a question like, do you know this is a dream? Or do you know I'm dreaming you? And sometimes the dream figure will come back and say, how do you know I'm not dreaming you? And I remember one lucid dreamer had this happen and told the dream figure, well, look, I can fly. And then the dream figure said, well, look, I can fly too. And so you realize that dream figures are very, very complex, and that the dream state, because you're lucidly aware, gives you that chance to see how complex they really are. But what happened to me in 1985, I was part of a lucid dream exploration group. And in one of our experiments, I asked a dream figure, what do you represent? Because that was the experimental goal. And instead of the dream figure responding, a voice boomed out from above him and boomed out a response. And so after that, I began to wonder, is there an awareness behind the dream? And so in my lucid dreams, after that point, I would just ask questions to this awareness behind the dream. So I would just shout out questions like, show me something important for me to see. And then all of a sudden, the entire lucid dream would change, and I'd be looking at something important for me to see. So this is one of the ways that lucid dreamers basically engage or interact what I conceive of as a larger awareness, which Carl Jung might have called the self with a capital S.
So you think that you were questioning your own consciousness?
In a broader sense, basically my larger awareness, that's what I would say is happening there. And so lots of lucid dreamers have done this. Normally I encourage them just start out with a simple question like, hey, dream, show me something important for me to see. I remember one of the people I interacted with, a woman who runs a large lucid dreaming site called World of Lucid Dreaming, she shouted out, hey, show me something hilarious. And at that moment, all of a sudden appeared this giant kind of goofy-looking gorilla that looked like it had blue shag carpeting as kind of an outfit. And she said it had this kind of groovy walk as it was walking down the way, and she immediately began to laugh. So you can see how by using your intent, by shouting out questions, let me have this experience, you can have that. You can take this deeper, though. I've given some talks in London. I remember one time I gave a talk and suggested that a person shout out, let me experience unconditional love. Okay, let me experience unconditional love. 6 months later, when I was back in London, this woman told me that she had done this, and she said the resulting experience was so profound that when she woke up, she said she cried tears of joy for almost 15 minutes nonstop. She said even her roommate knocked on the door to see if she was okay. But that's how interesting this experience of lucid dreaming can be when you begin to engage what I feel is a larger awareness.
Robert, how often do you engage in lucid dreaming, do you think?
You know, so I've been doing this since 1975, so I've had more than 1,000 lucid dreams. But on average, I just probably have 2 to 4 lucid dreams a month. So I can't say that I'm great at it. There are some people who lucid dream every night.
I'm talking with Robert Wagner. His most recent book is Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, Tips and Techniques for Insight, Creativity, and Personal Growth. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about lucid dreaming. My guest is Robert Wagner. He's the author most recently of Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, Tips and Techniques for Insight, Creativity, and Personal Growth. We have a lot of people on the phone. You can also join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mark is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Wanted to check and see whether or not this type of lucid dreaming technique has ever been used for any kind of therapeutic purposes. Specifically, I was wondering if something like sleep apnea, which is so common and oftentimes requires a machine in order to correct it, and I was wondering if you could, you know, in your subconscious, look at your physical state and somehow affect it or not.
You know, that's an interesting question, Mark. Stephen LaBerge, who was at Stanford and got his PhD there and did his PhD dissertation on lucid dreaming, he did some studies of could lucid dreamers affect their respiration rate and what would happen in their physical bodies when lucid dreamers tried to do that in a lucid dream. And so he brought people into the sleep lab. He had them all set up, and he instructed them that when they became aware in the lucid dream, signal with their eyes, and then begin to affect their breathing, either by, in the lucid dream, increasing their breathing rate. And what he found is that the physical body mirrored what the lucid dreaming self was doing. So when he encouraged people to breathe more quickly, the physical body began to breathe more quickly. And so he began to realize after a number of studies just like this that there was some psychophysical parallelism between what you did in the lucid dream and how the body responded. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever used it for this particular investigation of how lucid dreaming might be able to affect sleep apnea, because oftentimes people who have sleep apnea have a hard time becoming lucidly aware because they have disrupted dreams and sleep. But it is one of those things that would be useful. Fascinating to look into.
Well, and you share anecdotes about people who have used lucid dreaming for different things in your book, but as a therapist, I think it would be difficult to try to use lucid dreaming with a patient because it seems to me that not everybody can master it.
Exactly. You'd have to become a good lucid dreamer to try this. It is interesting, though, as you mentioned, there are a fair number of anecdotes of people who have used lucid dreaming to apparently improve a physical condition. One of them came from a friend of mine, Ed Kellogg, who talked about a woman he knew who had plantar warts on her feet. And these plantar warts were very painful, and for months she'd been trying to visualize them to go away because there wasn't really a medical treatment that was helping. But what happened was she decided in a lucid dream to try to resolve these plantar warts. She became consciously aware in a dream, remembered her intent to get rid of these plantar warts, And in the lucid dream, she created a ball of healing light and put it over each of her dream feet, intending for them to be healed. She says that when she woke up, all the plantar warts had turned black overnight, and within 10 days they fell off and never returned. So of course, that's an anecdote, but you could see how a medical researcher could bring 20 people who have a non-life-threatening ailment, like let's say some skin issue that resists common treatment. He'd teach 10 of them how to use lucid dreaming to affect their physical body and have the other 10 just be the control group and then come back 6 months later and see what's happened. So you do realize that there is that chance that this could be brought into a sleep lab and actually studied.
Mark, thank you so much for your call. And Nancisa also has a similar question. Did you want to add to that, Nancisa?
Well, yes. I have a broken back, and I do have lucid dreams, and I'm very conscious of them. And I had never thought about using lucid dreaming as a pain management. What do you have to say about that?
You know, it's interesting. Since I'm on Facebook, like most everyone else, about 2 months ago, I got a lucid dream from a medical intern. So here's a person who's studying to be a doctor. And he said he was a little bit curious about this idea of lucid dreaming and how it might be able to affect the body, because mind-body issues are big in medicine. And he became lucidly aware in a dream. He remembered that he had what he believed to be a torn rotator cuff. And in the lucid dream, using what he had read in my first book, he intended for it to be improved and to be healed. He said when he woke up, it was 80% better than it had been before he went to sleep. And so you can see here that the mind-body have a very close connection. And when you're consciously aware within a lucid dream, when you're consciously aware at that depth of the psyche, it seems possible that you could make a considerable improvement. It's interesting that Buddhists who use lucid dreaming in their practice of dream yoga, they say that an action performed in a lucid dream is 7 times more effective than one performed at the waking state. And I think the reason they say that is when you're in that deep state of dreaming, you're at a different level of awareness, a different level of consciousness. And when you intend something in a thoughtful, articulate way, oftentimes it can have dramatic effects.
Nancisa, thank you so much for your call, and I hope that gives you some relief. We have a couple of emails here. This one is from Kim. She says, I easily recall my dreams and often share them with others simply because I find them so interesting. I became aware that I was having a recurring dream of being in a large old house. In the beginning, I had the feeling I was needing to get out of the house as something seemed to be pursuing me. Once I realized this, now when I dream about the house, I've decided to just explore the rooms. I've found many interesting things. Is this a form of lucid dreaming? And what could the significance of dreaming this recurring dream be?
You know, as I mentioned in my book, there's levels of lucid awareness. And so sometimes in dreams, we'll find that we're semi-lucid. We basically understand that this isn't right, this isn't our normal home, and we explore with that kind of semi-lucid awareness. But it sounds like Kim is either becoming lucidly aware or semi-lucid and using that state. One thing that I've found that's very helpful for many people is Carl Jung brought up the idea of the shadow. And so these are the denied, ignored, repressed aspects of the self that often in a normal dream are in a shadow's position. They're behind us. So they're the monster who's chasing us or the thing that's bothering us. And so oftentimes if you have that sense of being pursued or chased or whatever, if you can become lucidly aware and just turn and face and see what is it that's chasing you, oftentimes, in that moment of awareness, you'll realize something about who's pursuing you and get some insight into what that whole issue is all about.
This is from Stephanie in Manchester. She said, I vividly remember most of my dreams and never have what I would call nightmares, just stress dreams in which many things go wrong. Often, as I find myself in one of my recurring dreams, I have a moment of resignation as I realize that I'm once again caught in this mental trap and I'm not going to have a restful night of sleep. And then I just watch as things unfold, often against my wishes. The best I've managed is to realize that I'm interacting with a lost pet and take advantage of the moment because I know that the the animal is long dead and I need to appreciate the moment while it lasts. That only works for me with pets. When I'm with people who've died, there is a huge weight of emotional anxiety that enters me and makes me helpless against whatever my subconscious dictates. What am I doing wrong?
I don't think you're doing anything wrong, but if you can bring lucid awareness into that moment, you can begin to have some insight into what's going on. Frequently, lucid dreamers, when they see someone deceased, they'll often realize, wait a second, this person has passed away. Oh, this must be a dream. And at that moment, they can decide what they want to do. Some will have a conversation with the deceased dream figure. Sometimes they'll find that the deceased dream figure has a message for them. And it was really interesting. I was invited to an online event, a gentleman who runs a place called Lucid Lab, and he's Lucid is spelled with an X. He talks about when he was younger, he had a lucid dream in which his mother appeared, and his mother had died just a few months previous. And he became lucidly aware because he realized that she had passed. And in the lucid dream, she told him, I want you to give a message to my friend, and then gave him the message. So when he woke up, he decided to contact the friend, and he went to the friend's place and passed on the message. And so the lucid dreamer didn't understand the message, but the person receiving it understood it totally. So that's another fascinating aspect of lucid dreaming. When you become consciously aware at that level of the psyche, what's going on there? What's the meaning of these kind of encounters?
Now, we talked about earlier the fact that children seem to have more lucid dreams than adults, something that we tend to lose if we don't cultivate it as we age. This is a question from Joan. What would be simple ways a 10-year-old girl who's having bad dreams could remedy the fear of going to sleep? Is there something with lucid dreaming that could possibly help her?
Right. You know, some parents have told me that this is what they do. They'll talk to the child because oftentimes the child will show up at 3 o'clock in the morning in their bedroom complaining about the witches or the dragon or the monster that's after them. And so what they'll tell them is they'll say, well, look, the only time you see that dragon is in your dreams, right? And so the child will say, yes, of course, that's the only time they see the dragon. And they go, the next time you see the dragon, I want you to realize that it's a dream. And then if you want, you can ask the dragon, would you like to play? Or you can ask the dragon, what is it that it wants? Or you can ask the dragon if it would be your friend. And so by making friends with those scary dream figures, while lucidly aware, we often overcome whatever issue that dragon or monster represents.
Dave is on the line next in West Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you doing, Carrie?
Good. What's your question?
Well, Mr. Wagner spoke earlier about doing some EEGs on people that had lucid dreamings, and I think he mentioned also about the self-hypnosis. I was wondering what different areas perhaps of the brain were active during those two different states, or if they were pretty similar.
Okay, and Robert, were you able to understand that question? I know Dave's phone line's a little fuzzy.
I'm sorry, I didn't really understand.
All right, he's asking what, when you look at brain waves, and you know, people have studied this with lucid dreaming, what's the difference between the brain waves of a lucid dreamer and the brain waves of someone who is hypnotized or has done self-hypnosis?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I'm not exactly sure about the hypnosis aspect, but there's been a really fascinating study recently in Germany conducted by Ursula Voss and Alan Hobson and some others. And here's what they did. So they knew where on the cerebral cortex was activated during a lucid dream. So they brought people who had never experienced a lucid dream into their sleep lab, and they put these little electro-invoking tabs by that part of the brain. And basically, they stimulated it to 25 to 40 hertz of electrical stimulation and prompted these people, 70% of them, into lucid dreaming. And so this is what they call transcranial electrical stimulation of a lucid dream. And this is at a very early stage and one of those wild things that people are still discussing exactly how that occurred. So it seems like the brain waves of a lucid dreamer approach that 25 to 40 hertz level, and then they become lucidly aware.
Now, Robert, a lot of people have been studying lucid dreaming, or maybe not a lot, but some people have been working hard to study and understand lucid dreaming. What for you are some of the main questions that remain unanswered?
You know, I think what we would do well to explore is this nature of the virtual reality of dreaming. So in a normal virtual reality game, we know that somewhere a software programmer created that virtual reality, and the game is going according to certain rules and all. But when you're consciously aware in a dream, who created that experience? What was the code? Where's the programmer? And when you begin to do these things where you ask questions to have conceptual experiences, you begin to see that it appears a lucid dreamer can contact a larger awareness, or maybe their unconscious mind, so to speak. And so by exploring these kind of questions, we can begin to see how deep lucid dreaming goes. Because Carl Jung suggested that if we did have some sort of inner self, it would have a number of characteristics like memory and feeling and perception and all these kind of things. And sometimes when people in a lucid dream request to have an experience, sometimes they'll hear a non-visible voice will reply and tell them that they're not ready for such a deep experience, and to basically come back when they're more focused and engaged. And so you see that kind of feeling aspect of this non-visible awareness in its responses. So I think there's a lot of things we can study in lucid dreaming. Unfortunately, this whole world of dreaming and lucid dreaming research receives very little attention and very little resources, but I'm hoping someday people will see the real potential here for exploring some of the larger questions of science.
When you talk about reaching out to that greater consciousness, and you referred to it as the self with a capital S earlier, do you feel like you're reaching out to a consciousness beyond yourself, or is this all within your brain?
Boy, I think it makes us rethink what exactly is the self. Is the self just this ego layer, this waking self layer, or is there more to the self? I remember the ancient Greeks had 23 words in which they talked about the soul. They had 23 words for the soul because they were interested in this idea of our larger awareness, our soul. And so it's hard to know exactly how to think of the self. We talk about consciousness studies, but how can we really understand the consciousness, our consciousness, without understanding the subconsciousness? And through lucid dreaming, we can begin to explore how exactly the subconscious and unconscious work, so we can finally understand what exactly consciousness is all about.
We talked earlier about how often you have lucid dreams. Do you try to enter this state every night?
No, I wouldn't say I try every night. When I'm trying to do experiments, I do, or when I'm involved in some program, I do. But most nights, if a lucid dream happens, that's great, and I run with it. But what I do try to do is have ideas of what I want to explore in a lucid dream. Because as soon as you become consciously aware, you modulate your emotions, you enhance your awareness, you stabilize that lucid dream, you've got to think, what do I want to do now that I'm consciously aware? And so I always like to have experiments to conduct.
Robert, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charity.
Robert Wagner is the author most recently of Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple Tips and Techniques for Insight, Creativity, and Personal Growth. You can visit his website at lucidadvice.com. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Also joining our staff, Julia Davis. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, will be here. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.